AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, we're back. Back again with a great interview we did this week. I was very excited to do that, and we're going to go right into a lot of stuff to talk about. Our usual format, got some things to catch up on, got some SummerSlam preview to talk about. We've got hopefully a big episode coming up, the next one, post-SummerSlam, a lot to talk about. So let's get rolling. Ed, you know what we do? We always do this first, but special interview this week. Go ahead.
Well, tonight's interview, it is brought to you by GoonGuard. GoonGuard.com. Check him out. Best mouthpieces. Check out Andy on the screen. He's got a picture of him. Check him out. Promo code 1973. Andy, take it away.
So I just want to touch. Brad wasn't there for the interview. The professor and Ed were on the call that we had with a fantastic Division I hockey player, a young lady by the name of Kaylee Smith from, I believe, where is it, Ed? Where is she? Sacred
Framingham,
Heart.
Massachusetts.
Yep, she's from Framingham, plays for Sacred Heart, D1 school, D1 athlete, coach, mentor, molding young youth, as we say. Just real quick before I drop the interview in, I want to say, what did you guys think of the interview?
I thought it was really good. I thought she was very well spoken, and it was very interesting to hear her story and of how she got started, and some of the stories she told about people that she knows that are playing at BC and BU. I mean, there's some big. She's got some big connections.
Ed, thoughts on the interview?
Sure, I thought it was great. She was super well-spoken. She's very well-polished. Her story was very interesting on how, you know, she took us pretty much from when she first started all the way up to what she's doing now. One of the things that really stuck out to me was
that she loves my kid.
Well, there's that. Yeah. But I mean, she made mention of, like, you know, making sure that, you know, as you kind of progress, you know, and you get more and more serious, that some of the tournaments that you play in, you know, you should kind of keep it fun or not even playing them. And I thought that was a big one. And I also thought also when she touched on, like, the things that she did off ice and the off ice conditioning along with the, you know, nutritionist and that type of thing, that was really good too, because that's kind of the part that you never hear of about people going to the show or taking the next step in their athletic career. You know, nutrition, rest, recovery is super, super important. I'm glad that she touched on that.
Yeah, before I drop the interview in, I just wanted to say that the thing that I took away from it was, I remember a lot of the guys that are sports guys, Darren being one of them, Ryan being another one, always talking about coaching philosophies and things like that. And it's nice to get a perspective from different people on their coaching path and their pros and cons, what they learned as a player that they bring to being a coach, and the things that as a coach they would never do to their players. And I love that aspect of it. So great interview. I'm going to drop it in probably right around here somewhere. So it's been a while. Let's talk some pop culture. We had some celebrity passing. So a bunch of them, they all kind of dropped over the last couple of weeks. We kind of shied away from it for a few weeks. We're back to it. Let's get into it. So the first one that I want to mention, trying to go in kind of order, was Shelley Duvall. Shelley Duvall passed. Two movies that I remember Shelley Duvall from, The Shining, and Popeye. Now, is she, in your opinion, is she more known for The Shining, or is she more known as Olive Oil from Popeye with Robin Williams? What do you think, Tom?
Oh, I think it's definitely The Shining.
Ed?
But Popeye, it was a great movie, but I think The Shining was kind of the one that, like, put her on the map, I thought.
Yeah, quite the looker, too.
She, what I didn't realize was in her later life, she had some mental problems, I guess. And she was actually on a Dr. Phil episode and they where they tried to he tried to help her. And from what I hear, she kind of fell off the map a little bit, and she was living down in Texas when she passed away.
Ed, you want to give it a?
Oh, I'd have to say The Shining, hands down. I mean, I for some reason, I really could never really appreciate the Popeye movie. I don't know. Maybe it was just how I took it at the time, or, you know, even if I've seen it more recently, probably within the last, you know, 15, 20 years. I mean, Robin Williams was in that. So it was good, but I'd say, I don't know, I thought that it could have been done a lot differently. And The Shining, I mean, I believe that there was one take that she did 147 times in that movie. So, you know, she did a great job in that movie. I mean, I've actually been to the place where they actually filmed it up in Estes Park in Colorado. She did such a wonderful job in that movie. I mean, you know, there was never really like a ton of blood and guts, but it scared the hell out of you though. So.
Bradford, we're going to you. Shining or Popeye?
She was the original Scream Queen, man. Like, she was the original, you know, video vixen running, you know, like you said, she was a looker. She's a very good looking woman running around screaming. She was known for the blood curdling scream and The Shining. I think maybe she got a little bit of typecast because of that movie. That kind of pigeonholed her into what, you know, people just wanted her to be in more horror films. That's kind of like the track. That's the way it happens sometimes. That she, you know, of course she went and did Popeye, and I don't know. You know, she's Olive Oil. Not really, like, I don't think of like an attractive woman. Olive Oil doesn't come to mind, but, you know, the Shining is such a classic Stephen King novel, such a classic horror movie. The Shining is brought up and gets you know, little Easter egg and cameoed in a lot of pop culture movies. Ready Player One have like a whole section in that movie that was just like committed to The Shining, but it gets its love.
Now, I thought you were going to go a different way with that statement about The Shining with tinfoil hat kind of stuff, with the moon landing and Stanley Kubrick. Yeah.
Stanley Kubrick. That's a deep, 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 deep dive.
Yep. So, Bob Newhart. Bob Newhart passed away. You know, Bob Newhart's style of comedy was not really my style of comedy, but people loved him. He had his own show. He was in that, you know, kind of Mary Tyler Moore kind of group with Ted Knight and Ed Asner and, you know, that generation of comedians. And the Newhart show was on when we were, you know, kind of, you know, 12, 13, 14 in there. And it was a popular show. I mean, if you like that kind of comedy. Tom, thoughts on Bob Newhart?
And for the young people, like, you know, Brad and Chris. Yeah.
I don't know who he is.
More as he was Professor Proton on The Big Bang Theory. And that I think he actually won an award for that, for guest starring on in a comedy series. I don't know if it was a People's Choice Award, if it was an Academy Award, but he actually won an award for it. And but his deadpan style, I thought, was hilarious.
Ed, thoughts on Bob Newhart?
Well, I have to say, I mean, that deadpan kind of comedy kind of fits in, especially when he did, you know, the Bob Newhart show from Vermont. That's kind of like that very kind of dry New England kind of Northeast kind of humor, that type of thing. One thing that I know that most everybody here on the show, we weren't alive when it came out. However, his first movie was Hell is for Heroes. And he was in the bunker and he was having a make-believe conversation. And I remember watching that movie many, many moons ago with Brett. And you know, one of those movies that they put on in years ago. I believe it was probably either on TV 56 or TV 64. Or maybe TV 38. I can't quite remember.
Probably TV 38. We'll go with that. It kind of fits their kind of mold for movies that they would show. Bradford, Bob Newhart.
Bob, I didn't know who he was at first. I had to Google him. He was the dad from Elf.
Yes.
He was Buddy's dad.
Yeah.
That's what I know him from.
Yeah, so thoughts on Bob Newhart? Yeah, I mean, he had a pretty lengthy life. So probably I would say a Hollywood legend, you know, for his, you know, style and what he's been a part of. Speaking of Hollywood legends, Richard Simmons. Thoughts on the passing of Richard Simmons. Ed, I know you had a pair of those shorts at one time.
Well, candy cane shorts were all of the rage back in the 80s, just so you know. If you remember, I think that you and I both had the same height shorts, I believe, that when we played for the St. Joseph's Wildcats, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, you know? I remember when I saw him the first time, I'm like, oh, look, ball huggers. Yeah.
Well, I have to say that, you know, he's from New Orleans. You know, he really kind of really embraced the population of, you know, getting people that were overweight and getting them to move, you know, sweating to the oldies and that type of thing. And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, if you really kind of look at it, he brought people into exercise in a very easy and friendly way. And, you know, especially low impact and not very intimidating. So you could see that he really, and I believe that he kept off the 100, 120 pounds that he lost, because I think he was, when he was 12 or 13, I think he weighed 182 pounds or something like that. And he kept off, you know, pretty much 100, that 100 pounds that he made. So, you know, it was sad to see. You know, he had some good gags with Howard Stern and everything like that going through the years. And, you know, he was always on TV, you know. He always believed in, you know, body movement, which is always a good thing. You know, prevents diabetes and heart disease and all and strokes and all that other fun stuff.
I would say that probably out of the Gen X generation of celebrities, probably one of the more positive minded people. With talk about DDP with the power of positivity. Richard Simmons was the original DDP for never any interview you ever saw with that guy. He was always in that Richard Simmons positive mode, whether you laughed at him for underlining things, you know, maybe he was, maybe he wasn't, who knows. He was always about the positive aspect of changing people's lives and actually trying to help people. So you got to respect that about, you know, him as a person. Thomas Richard Simmons.
It's kind of sad because they tried to make a biopic movie on him. And actually, I don't know if they finished it, but Pauly Shore is going to play him. And he actually tried to get Richard Simmons' blessing on the movie. Richard Simmons, he didn't wish him any ill will, but he did. He said he would not endorse the movie at all because he said he doesn't know how much of it would be actually legit because they never talked to him about his and asked him about some of the life stories. So it'll be interesting to see how the movie comes out.
Bradford, thoughts on your boy Richard Simmons?
I wouldn't say he's my boy or anything like that. Let's not get carried away. He was, I just remember as a kid seeing he's the original infomercial fitness guru, sweating to the oldies, you know. I don't know what else to say about him.
Yeah, just
that's y'all's generation.
Yeah, I think way to toss it back there, bud. I just thought as far as having a positive influence on people, you know, everybody, he had a unique look like Liberace, I'll put it like that. Everybody knew who he was. I actually was at the mall one time. True story, Emerald Square Mall in Attleboro. I'm walking through. All of a sudden, who do I see? Freaking Richard Simmons walking around the mall. True story, just the tank top, the shorts, he had the hand weights in, and he was going around like it's three-level mall back when the malls were hopping in, you know, the 90s, and he had something going on there, a promotional thing, and he was just out doing his walk around the mall, and people were talking to him, and he wasn't, you know, he didn't have a celebrity bone in his body as far as interacting with people. So speaking of people that have the positive impact on people's lives, somebody else, Dr. Ruth Westheimer. The professor, thoughts on Dr. Ruth?
I mean, she lived a very, very full life. I mean, she was a Holocaust survivor, and she built herself up from there, where she was money, man. She came over here, I believe she started out on the radio as a therapist, sex therapist, I guess. And she just built her way up. And I believe she had ended up, didn't she have a segment on Howard Stern? Was it Howard Stern show?
She had when cable was kind of taken off, she had like a call-in talk show. And, you know, if you had late night cable and you were new to that stuff, you kind of wanted to listen to it to see what you would hear. And, you know, if your mother and father didn't tell you what's what, you got a little extra from Dr. Ruth. Ed, Dr. Ruth.
Dr. Ruth. Well, Tom brought up an excellent point. I mean, you know, to survive the Holocaust and the horrors, to, you know, with what happened there, and to come on and move over here and to build what she built was truly amazing. You know, because she was, I mean, if you think about it, before the middle of the 80s, I mean, sex was always kind of taboo about talking about it and everything like that. It was, you know, you'd get the quick fifth and sixth grade, the birds and the bees from the old teacher, you know, girls in that room, boys in that room. Yeah, they give you the big chart up on the screen. This is what it is. And they're like, don't do it, you know. And she kind of took it in a different direction. And, you know, she had that call-in show. And, you know, she really kind of embraced the fact about telling you, like, that, you know, that sex is part of life, and it should be pleasurable. It's all about taking care of your partner and that type of thing. I thought that she really kind of opened eyes to, you know, that late 80s, early 90s kind of generation and that type of thing.
Bradford, Dr. Ruth.
I mean, I grew up in the age of the internet. I didn't have to dial in my FM radio to the Dr. Ruth show. Don't worry about the birds and the bees.
Well, it's a true experience, Brad, let me tell you.
See, we come from a generation where you're outside with your buddies and you're playing guns in the woods or hide and seek or something, and you come across a Playboy that's about 12 years old that's been sitting there for about 14 years. And you say to yourself, my whole world has changed. What? Hurry up. Hide it. I hope nobody's around. Stick it under some leaves. Go get a bag. We're gonna save this right here because nobody could bring it home. That's how our generation learned about stuff. You know, you saw things because you stumbled upon it. And just like, that's how I got two kids. I stumbled upon it. So
yeah.
That's just how life works. But, you know, fond memories of both Richard Simmons.
There's
and
the
Dr.
name of the
Ruth.
Elvis tape.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The hidden VHS. Hey, you can't beat right. The VHS back in the day. Somebody from our generation, somebody from our age group, somebody from a big show from our Gen X time, Shannon Doherty. What do you think, Thomas? Shannon Doherty, thoughts on Charmed?
Come on. Now, I'm Brad, back way back in, like, what is it? Probably the 70s and early 80s. There was a show called Little House on the Prairie. And that's actually where she got her start. She was a little Jenny Wilder on Little House on the Prairie. But she was a very polarizing figure in Hollywood. I mean, you either loved her or hated her, I guess, out there, because she was very vocal and she spoke her mind. But it was sad. She fought cancer really hard the last few years. And I mean, I think she had just finished her fourth round of chemo when she passed away. But it's a sad thing. I mean, it just shows you that it doesn't matter how much money you have, cancer will get you.
Ed, thoughts on the passing of Shannon Doherty?
Well, I mean, I still remember AP history. And, you know, the first 5 minutes was dedicated to what happened on Beverly Hills 90210.
Yeah.
Don't worry. You know, we don't care who is the, you know, who the Holy Roman Emperor was, you know, at this particular point in time. We need to talk for the first 5 minutes about what happened on Beverly Hills 90210. You know, and you know, a lot of people that are a little bit younger than we are, they don't realize how big that show really was for all of us. It was huge. And you know, I didn't never really watch too much on Charmed. I mean, I always liked her character on Beverly Hills 90210, and I thought she was a great actress. So, you know, I mean, she's certainly not up on the Mount Rushmore or anything, but she definitely, you know, whatever she was in, she always did a great job. So,
yeah, she was tough, I guess, to work with as a, you know, co-star or whatever show she was on. There was always an issue with, you know, her arguing with somebody about something. And I know she didn't get along with the girls on Charmed, or there was some, you know, infighting with that cast. And she had done the Comic-Con rounds the last couple of years, and the 90210 cast is in that realm of you know, they're making the rounds, and it's kind of sad in a way that her and Luke Perry, who were connected on the show, are both gone now. So Brad, thoughts on Shan Daugherty?
Yeah, this one actually, no. I mean, as I was growing up, I guess I kind of caught the tail end of like the 90210 stuff. But Charmed, come on. That show's a classic. But yeah, she did. She was, for lack of better words, you know, she was, you know, rhymes with itch. Can I say that word on YouTube?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
She was kind of a bitch.
Yeah.
she had beef on 90210. She had beef on Charmed. They kicked her off of Charmed. They brought her back. But she made amends, I think. And I think she was fighting cancer for a while, though. I think that's also kind of like why she was so like moody, like the medications and stuff, because she was on and off of Charmed. I think it's one part being in, you know, in the shit with her friends, and one part being sick or whatever. But Luke Perry and her going, I mean, yeah, that's you know, once you start connecting the dots, man, it's kind of sad.
Yeah, I was always an Alyssa Milano guy, just saying, for the Ooh. record, for the record,
for the record.
Yep.
Yes.
Going on record. So if she watches this, you're welcome to come on the podcast. Thank you very much. So let's wrap up the celebrity passings and get to something that we do every week. And it is time for the Professor and Tom's Shitty Picks. Take it away, Czar of the Telestrator.
Here we go. Tom's Shitty Picks is brought to you by Brock Street Brewing Company, located at 244 Brock Street South in Whitby, Ontario. Everything they brew is in-house, including their hard iced teas, their beers, vodka sodas, and their hard seltzers. So if you're in the Whitby area, go check them out and tell them the 1973 podcast sent you.
And Scotty, cut us a check.
Now, for this episode, the Olympics, I got to go full Americana again.
All right.
I'm going full USA. I'm going to pick the USA to win the total medal count. I won't go as far as to say they'll win the most gold medals, but I think they're going to dominate in medals. And so I'm going Team USA.
And, you know, I'm going to add to that. Brad was mentioning how the opening ceremonies was one of his favorite of all times.
Bro.
Just saying.
We could do a whole episode.
We know it.
On the satanic rituals that was the opening ceremony. They had a golden calf. They mocked the Last Supper. Snoop Dogg was wearing a Baphomet necklace, for crying out loud. There's so many more too. Like it's spiritual warfare. One of the podcasters I listen to, he's always talking about, it's not the elites versus us. It's not the rich versus the poor. It is literally a spiritual battle of satanic devil worshipers trying to push that shit on us. And go watch the opening ceremony of the Olympics. It's all there.
So speaking of stuff we haven't talked about in a while, it's not time for the tinfoil hat yet, but it is time for the NFL started heating up a little bit. And last night, I get home, I sent out a couple of little texts to get the guys on board, who's on this week, you know, who's in, who's out. All of a sudden, bing, football, bing, football, bing, football, 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 football. I said, you know what? I said, it's time for me to kick back. I've relaxed, just got in the door pretty much. So it's time for football talk. So let's start with the professor. Still part of your segment. Let's talk some football. Have at it.
These contracts for the quarterbacks are getting out of hand. I mean, it's getting ridiculous because...
You know what grinds my gears?
Yes. Tua Tagovailoa signed a four-year, $212.4 million deal, $53.1 million a year.
And he's in the bloodline.
Makes him the highest paid quarterback. He should be. Now, listen to the four highest paid quarterbacks. Trevor Lawrence, Joe Burrow, and Jordan Love, who also signed yesterday. We'll get into him in a second. And then Tua. And it's these quarterbacks have to realize that it's a team game. I mean, look how at Brady, Mahomes, Peyton Manning, all these guys that great quarterbacks, they know enough that you can, if you get a big contract like that, you're not going to be able to afford the team around you. Doesn't matter how many points you score if you don't have a defense that can stop anyone. And if you look at Miami now, Miami has three players on offense guaranteed. All three guys are getting at least guaranteed $70 million a year. I mean, that's ridiculous. It's totally, totally ridiculous.
Bradford, you got to weigh in.
Man, I've read up on the whole look. I don't know if Jordan Love, he was drafted in what, 2020, but I think he only played one full season, and that was last year. Now, yep. I'm not saying he didn't do great. Like, he played outstandingly well, obviously. They beat the Cowboys in the dang playoffs. But for a guy on a rookie contract, had one good season, and the front office is automatically just throwing the bag at him, being like, you're a franchise quarterback. We're going to pay you this. Now, the way they structured the deal, from what I read, there's like bonuses, incentives, there's a pile of guaranteed money, then there's stuff that's paid over time. So their front office worked a deal. So I think it was a very beneficial deal to both Jordan Love and the team to give them room to sign people the way it was structured. But then I look at like Tua, like I don't, when you say who's the top paid quarterbacks, the first one that comes to mind is not Tua. It's no. Definitely not Trevor Lawrence. But what these teams are doing, and they're smart for doing this, is they pay these guys who are mostly unproven market setting deals. So as the market starts to increase now, because guess who's up due for a contract? Dak Prescott. So now they just basically forced Jerry Jones' hand. Jerry Jones is going to have to make him the next highest paid. And if you pay Dak, then the quarterback after him is going to have to be paid. And it's just going to keep going up and up and up in tiers. So they pay these dudes, these mega contracts straight out the gate like this. And in the long run, they're going to wind up being not the highest paid quarterbacks. It's a business move. It's very smart. And when you got a team like the Cowboys, where CeeDee Lamb and Micah Parsons are both holding out to be the highest paid non-quarterbacks in the NFL, how are you going to pay both of them? And Dak is due for a contract. The math don't add up. One of those three, or two of those three, aren't going to be with the Cowboys in the next 2 years. This is, be honest. You know, so I don't know. It is a quarterback friendly league. They pay these dudes the big bag. Like Tom said, you know, you can't bring anybody to help. What are they want to do? Unless you're the Eagles. The Eagles figured out how to pay people and make it work. I don't get it. Why can't other teams be like, why can't the Cowboys do what the Eagles do? I don't know. Doesn't make any sense.
Edwin, I'll weigh in.
Well, I'm just going to say, I'm going to give you a quote from Bill Belichick. Look at assholes. These quarterbacks, no, I'm talking about, that's what he'd say to the players, man. Not to you, not to Tom. I ain't talking to nobody on the screen.
I just got a nice pat on the back from somebody saying what a good host you are for this podcast, and you're already calling me an asshole.
But that was your mom.
Jeez. My mother watches this show.
I guess you're going to have to fire me or something. I don't know. You know, you're going to have to suspend me or something. You know, they're going to have to hold a paycheck on me or something.
Jeez.
You know, you know, like, first and foremost, the only one out of those top four that signed deals that's worth anything is Joe Burrow. He's the only one that's good. He's the only one that's gone to the Super Bowl out of all of them. Tua is fragile. I mean, he's got – if he takes one more big shot, like, he's done. Now, a lot of it too is just like these are the deals that they sign, and typically in the NFL, they're typically 1 year rolling contracts, so they're 1 year personal services contracts. So it's not even when they say it's guaranteed money, it's not necessarily guaranteed money. And I agree with everybody. These contracts are just getting way out of hand. Like, I mean, but again, you have to think about it. Like, you know, NFL Network is going to YouTube. That's going to be their paid subscription now. You know, like all these, then they're going to, you know, they're doing the prime games on Thursday night. They're putting like two of the playoff games on the Peacock Network. So the NFL's getting their money and the players are going to get paid. And the thing about it is like, you know, the NFL used to be somewhat affordable to go to. Regular people can't afford to go to the games anymore. They're outpricing their actual real fans. And nobody can, what are you going to pay? $300 a seat to go see a football game?
And freeze your ass off?
No, thanks. I'll sit at home when I'm free. I'm 2 minutes from my bathroom and I can come back to my seat and I'm not even missing any part of the game.
Right. You know? For that IBS.
And part of it is that to pay these players, you have to have more commercials. When you actually go to and watch an NFL game live, it's boring. There are so many stops in the game. There is no flow to that game whatsoever, especially if it's a primetime game and it's like the game of the week. Like, the game takes forever. So, I mean, the players are going to get paid regardless. I mean, the NFL has built a very successful business model, and these quarterbacks will always get paid because I can't remember if Brad or Tom mentioned it, but bottom line is that, I mean, it is certainly a quarterback-friendly league. It is not like back in the day, back in the 80s and early 90s when, you know, the defensive lineman could take two or three steps and really unload on these guys. You breathe near a quarterback now, and you get a 15-yard flag. So, you know, but again, there's only, 31 to 32 teams, and there's only really probably, 15 or 16 true starting quarterbacks in the NFL that can really play. So you got to pay them. But I don't agree with the number. It's stupid.
Yeah. So you want to pause the football talk till it heats up a little bit, and we'll just keep giving out little blurts here and there. And, you know, we'll get the fellas on once we in a couple returning faces for football season, so we can get that kind of, you know, off the hot stove, maybe into the oven after that. And let's talk some wrestling. Oh, wrestling. Before we
one thing before we get rolling on the wrestling.
Tag What's on. Up, brother?
ET phone home. How about the Canadian soccer team using a drone to spy on somebody's practice?
Mm-hmm. I didn't see that.
You didn't see that? Come on, man.
Yeah.
No. I mean, that's ridiculous. You're using a drone to it's soccer. I mean, how much edge can you get from taping a practice?
Maybe they're giving it a trial run.
Okay.
For future reference, for when they play Argentina or Brazil or Portugal, one of the heavies. Who knows?
How else should they cheat? Should they send like one of their staff members to the opposing team's practice and sit across the sidelines with binoculars and steal their signs?
Well, that's effective and it works.
You want to watch some good soccer? Watch Ted Lasso. Great TV show. Yep. I think it's only three seasons, but I would, for a guy that's not a big soccer person, I absolutely love the concept of that show. Let's talk some wrestling. So we're going into SummerSlam weekend next week. Hopefully we have a big show to follow that up. That's what we're planning. Bradford is going to send a video to open our show. I didn't ask him, but I'm asking him now. From a SummerSlam watch party.
The fuck?
With everybody who's there, just say, you know, 1973 podcast. You know, whatever. You do good with that, Brad. You work well. You and Chris, you got your things you do really well.
I'll do my best.
Okay. We love you. We love the effort. sounds like you're all in. I love it. So some wrestling talk. Cody Rhodes, let's real quick. They did a show in Japan. I thought it was really cool. At the end of his match, they gave him a replica robe of one of the appearances against superstar Billy Graham at Madison Square Garden with the hat red robe. I thought it was really cool. Great little touch, viral moment, things like that. A cool for nostalgia purposes and talking points. I thought that was really, really cool. Things are heating up. We got the I want to do some fantasy booking going into the Netflix run where maybe Raw will get a little risque. I would love to see the Liv Morgan, Rhea Ripley with Dominic in the middle love triangle, where all three of them are a thruple, as the kids say, and Dominic stuck in the middle, getting all the heat from the fans because he doesn't know what to do with that situation, which would be great heat for him. And they could be, you know, one's very dominating and the other one's kind of, you know, a little on the lipstick side, we'll say. Keep it like that. And he's caught in the middle and all three of them are a thing. Be really cool if they did that, pull a little Raven, Tommy Dreamer angle in there a little bit where there was stuff going on. Bradford, thoughts on the current state going into SummerSlam?
Well, I like what you said about what they did for Cody. Like, they did a WWE live super show or whatever they call it in Japan. And also they had AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura get a match, which, like, both of them kind of fell off the radar since WrestleMania. And I'm like, my goodness, that is like a fantasy booking that would do very well in the States. So I don't know. Hopefully they like tried it out in Japan. It was well received. I'm pretty sure the fans want to see that. I want to see that. I think that's a great matchup. But yeah, I've also kind of like read online that maybe Judgment. I've been saying Judgment Day is going to get broke up since like the Royal Rumble, and I've whiffed on it every single time. But it's their days, pun intended, are numbered. So I think maybe this is that one in SummerSlam where Finn and Liv Tyler are going to kind of steal Judgment Day away. Maybe Dom comes with, maybe not. I'm not sure if that's going to happen, but I think the writing's on the wall. I think Damian Priest is definitely leaving the team. I would love to see that love triangle thing. I just, the more skin, the better. And it's SummerSlam, so, you know, they can get a little risque. Let's bring back those old lingerie matches that Vince used to book.
I think from where it's they try to getting a little bit more reality based, and I like that. I don't want to see them go too hokey with certain things. Not at all. That ship has sailed. I mean, I think yeah. They could do, you know, true to life stuff where all these Bravo housewife shows are so popular that you know, they could kind of do something like that and just kind of. I don't know what they could do, but they could do better than the Attitude Era type stuff. That's already Thomas, thoughts on going into SummerSlam?
Well, it's funny because right now I think there are 7 actual scheduled matches and 6 of them are for belts. So I don't remember another pay per view where they had this many title matches. But I'm looking at the card and out of like the seven matches, there's only like maybe 2 matches where I'm looking at it saying, well, this guy's going to more than likely win, like Braun Breaker. I can't see them holding off on giving him the IC belt any longer than what they've done. I think it's his time. And to be honest, I think Cody wins. I think this is probably where Roman Reigns comes back and they start the whole OG bloodline and the new bloodline feud. And, but other than that, I mean, I think my prediction with the CM Punk and McIntyre match, I think you're going to see kind of a repeat of, I don't know if it was a Survivor Series match back in the day, but it was, I think, Bret Hart versus, I don't know if it was Undertaker, and Shawn Michaels was the referee, and Shawn Michaels went to hit Bret Hart, and Bret Hart moved, and he hit the Undertaker, and Bret Hart ended up winning the belt. And he did. So I think you'll see something like that happen. I don't even know who they'll have win that match, but I think Seth Rollins is going to cost one of the two the belt and start the feud with whoever wins there. But it should be
not for a belt, though, is it?
Drew McIntyre? No, that's the only one that's not for a belt.
Not. It's not. Pay is that even Brad. Like for like to be a contender, or is it just like a feud?
Yeah, I think it's just a feud.
You're all over the place, Bradford. You're cutting off the professor. You're calling Liv Morgan, Liv Tyler. So you're
Did I say Liv Tyler?
Oh yeah, but you love it.
And I think that Gunther wins the belt on Damian Priest. I think Brad's right. I think this is where the Judgment Day kind of falls apart.
I think you're going to see a lot of end of, like, I like on pay-per-views, the end of a storyline and the start of, I do think that the big pay-per-views, especially for them, should be the blow-off for something else to start, unless it's like a long-term storytelling, like how, you know, the Roman Reigns story was. But there was all kinds of little stories thrown in there too. So the Bloodline's going to win the tag belts, right? You'd think. That's the prediction. Yeah. Just to build those guys up. So Jacob Fatu, three matches in, and he's already a tag team champion at the end of this. Pretty cool. Cody's going to retain the belt, helped by Roman Reigns, probably. You think Rhea Ripley's going to win the belt, Thomas?
I don't think so. I think Dom's going to turn on her and side with Liv Morgan. I think it's time for Rhea Ripley. I think she's going to end up going face, going to be a good guy for a while.
There's probably going to be some kind of gaga coming out of that dog and pony show thing. The match isn't going to be long. That's 15, 20 minutes tops if it gets that far. LA Knight winning the U.S. title, that's a lock, right?
You can't keep giving it to Logan Paul, though, right? Like, he's hardly on TV. He shows up for quick cameos, quick appearances, and he's holding a belt. Like, I get it. He is a big star. I'm a fan of like the way he works in the ring. I think he's great for the business. But if you're not going to be present, you're not going to be there. Like, you're not Roman Reigns. Like, you can't just go dip out and come back whenever the hell you want. You're Logan Paul, man. Like, give LA Knight his due. Let him win this belt. Let him be a fighting champion. Let him defend that belt. You know, kind of add some more prestige to one of the lesser mid-card belts.
The thing I don't understand about the Braun Breaker thing is he already lost to Sami Zayn, like, the last pay-per-view. Why are they acting like he just didn't lose to him? I mean, they have him beat Dragunov, which is another guy that they're trying to push. And why would you put those two guys together when there's no belt on the line, to a preliminary match for a number one contender? No, you don't do that.
They're messing up Braun Breaker's like push. Like, they introduced him kind of similar to the way they did with Goldberg. He would come out. He had these bullshit squash matches where he would just spear the dude, pin him. Next week, same thing. Spear the dude, pin him. They're like, this guy's unbeatable. He doesn't get booked for King of the Ring, so he went on a rampage, kind of like how Jacob Fatu is just let to go unhinged on SmackDown, wrecked everybody on Raw, and then they're just like, oh, go lose the Sami Zayn clean. And then he didn't even go in there and, like, destroy him afterwards. It was like, oh, I got beat.
Right. And then they act like you never even saw that match, like, 3 weeks ago.
So if he doesn't come in here and absolutely demolish Sami Zayn and mop the floor with him, I'm gonna be pissed. Yeah. Braun Breaker needs to be pushed. This guy is an animal. He's a freaking animal in the ring. And he's, they're like, holding him back, and I don't know why.
He's kind of like how they were doing with Wardlow when he first broke away from MJF. They had Wardlow kind of like how Braun Breaker is, same kind of moveset too. And they haven't done nothing with him. And then he was a free agent for a little while, and there was some buzz that they were going to sign him WWE. They were interested, of course, because of his look. And then he re-signs with AEW, and you haven't heard from him. Which AEW, they had that match with MJF that went an hour. Probably one of the better matches that they've had in a while. But they're billing it as their best match that they've had in the 5 years they've been around. That's just trying to market on their point, because some of those CM Punk MJF matches were really good, especially that chain match. And I can't believe, like, they're just trying to push that way. And MJF, since he's been back, has been nothing but fire since he's been back on. That's him and Tony Storm are the two reasons why I watch AEW. That's how I like storytelling like that. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Tony Storm ends up back in WWE with the character that she has now, because it's she could do a lot with that in WWE with those younger girls that are there. I was going to segue to something and I lost my train of thought. Now I remember what it was. And this is for Ed. So Logan Paul, I want you to think about this, Ed. Logan Paul is the longest reigning U.S. champion in the history of that title belt, going back to 1975. Can you believe that?
No.
Yep. Yep. When I saw that stat and I thought about everybody that's held that belt.
Mm-hmm.
And how prestigious that belt once was, and they've kind of wiped the floor with it a little bit, but he's the longest reigning United States heavyweight champion in the history of the belt. Thoughts on that, Ed?
I mean, if he's not showing up and, you know, every week, he doesn't deserve the belt. Like, look, I mean, if you're the world heavyweight champion of the world, you can kind of pick your spots, you know, but you know, that's a belt that you used to see on TV quite often and that type of thing. And that's like one of those belts that should be like a really visible belt. You know, I've watched exactly 90 minutes of WWE this year. And it was a couple weeks ago. It's okay. I still think that some of the storylines, there's too many people. They need to thin the herd. My other thought process too on what's going on, like you gotta keep. I mean, I like the gimmick that you're doing with the two ladies and what's his name? He looks like Eddie Guerrero on steroids, basically.
Dirty Dom. You know?
I mean, I like the storyline, but you gotta leave with something better than that. Like that shouldn't be the first thing that you leave with. Leave with something better than that. That should be like coming back from the, you know, the 8:15 commercial, like come back with that. Come back with two things back to back strong. Don't leave with that. Like you're not keeping, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, are they pretty ladies? Of course they are. Are they athletic ladies? Of course they are. But it's not keeping my eyes on the TV.
See, and there you have it. That's, you know, one of the problems is the shows are too long, 2 hours max for a show. The roster is too big. There's people on that roster that you can cut that you're not going to worry about losing to AEW. They're not going to, if you can let Sasha Banks go, you can let anybody pretty much go other than like, you should have a top 10 of people that you cannot lose off your roster. After that, you know, if you send them over there, they're not going to draw you anything. Now the Hardy Boys are talking about coming back and having a run in NXT. Because they've never held those belts. They can barely make it through AEW now. Not that they're there anymore, but the matches that they were having, they weren't bangers. Not that I was never really a Hardy Boys fan, but them and NXT.
Look, there's respect there.
Yeah, I mean, they're just looking to go into the Hall of Fame and try to win those belts because they're the only belts they haven't really won. So I can see.
Speaking of signings, did you see who where the Motor City Machine Guns are rumored to have signed?
Yep. WWE. And they're way past their prime. I mean, when they were hot, when TNA was kind of how AEW is now, when they had that bigger roster of talent, but I don't know. I think time has passed on those guys too. I mean, it's good for them that they finally get a look, but way past those guys were gonna be like in their late 30s now, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I got another question for the other three guys here on the panel. I'm flipping the script here a little bit. I like them apples. How do you guys feel like the vignettes are? Do you feel like the vignettes are a little bit too long? That they're a little bit too drawn out? Do you think that it just feels like that they're almost reading it off of a cue card? Do you guys feel that way? Because that's how I felt with some of the vignettes that I saw when I watched a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. Go ahead, Bradford.
The Wyatt Six ones, I mean, yeah, because they definitely are just reading. They're well put together, I think. What I'm not prepared for and what I read online is we're going to get a vignette every week for each member of the Wyatt Six. Oh boy, we've only done Bo Dallas and dang, Rowan. What's his name?
Rowan.
Yeah, Rowan. Yeah, yeah. We've only done two. There's still a handful left to go.
I don't know, man.
And it's, if that's going to be the thing. And so they already slow rolled it so much to even introduce them. Now we get a vignette every week, and then they come out and they mess with Kurt. I almost said Kurt Angle, Chad Gable.
and Liv Tyler.
And Liv Tyler. Hey, look, man, I was out in the sun all day. I'm all right. I'm, my brain is fried, but like, yeah, the vignettes, man, the solo vignettes, Solo Sikoa and the new Bloodline, their vignettes on SmackDown are legit. The Wyatt Six ones, I really don't need three or four more of those.
I like how they, you can tell different people are involved with different storylines. You can tell that because Jacob Fatu doesn't even talk. He just stands there.
Yeah.
But the way that he commands the attention of what is this, look at this guy. Like he doesn't, you know, it's a presence. And I, like I said, what's missing in wrestling is the larger than life guy, the guy that can't work a 9-to-5 job. You don't want to go watch wrestling and see a guy that looks like he would pump your gas or make you a burger. That you're looking for these guys that can't function in normal society. That's why they're in wrestling. That's what is missing, the dangerous stuff. You look at the UFC guys, does anybody wear jewelry in a UFC match? No. Does anybody wear an earring? Why? Because it's a fight. So why would you let somebody in a fight wear a medallion or a necklace? If you're in a real fight, that'd be the first thing you rip off just to piss the guy off. Rip the earring out of his ear. So when the psychology of it is it's a fight, right? That it's two guys, one guy and another guy, they hate each other, they want to fight. Why would you, even when you see two girls square off, they take their earrings out, they take their rings off. I don't understand why the whole psychology of the fight, and we'll start with just that, isn't just based on what you see in UFC. I don't understand it. It's when somebody's getting choked in the corner, they're stomping their feet. If you were getting choked for real, you'd be trying to grab the person's. Let's talk about the psychology of what you're presenting and go from there. Nope. So, I mean, Jacob Fatu, Samoan Werewolf, big fan. Hope they do a lot with him. Tag team champion with like three matches under his belt. Great. Good for him. He deserves it. Bradford, anything else to add to the SummerSlam party?
Can't wait, man. It's if either Roman Reigns or Jimmy Uso, one of those two needs to come back and get the ball rolling.
Yeah.
I really hope they don't slow play this like they slow play the Wyatt Six. Just
I'm checked out with that. All checked out with that.
Yeah.
Thomas, anything else to add before we
move on from the rest?
Okay, so we're moving on to one of our better segments that we've done. It's time for get out your tinfoil hat and Bradford, Thomas, lead us in.
All righty. Brad's conspiracy of the week is brought to you by our very own 1973 podcast store. We're going to have a QR code up on the YouTube version of this episode. So all you got to do is click on that, take a picture, click on it. It'll send you to the store. We're usually feeling a little generous, so you're probably going to get free shipping or something like that.
Yeah.
So start your Christmas shopping early, buy a t-shirt, a mug, buy an apron. There's stuff for everyone there.
Buy some gear.
Buy some gear. Come on, winter's coming. You're going to need a couple shirts, probably a hoodie for the rink. You know, Brad's always at the rink. He needs a couple hoodies, things like that. So, Brad, take it away.
Bro, I don't need a hoodie. It is so hot down here. I've taken three showers today. All right. I'm dying. Can you share the screen? Did you enable that?
Okay. Let me, you're supposed to tell me ahead of time before we get going.
I've been in the sun all day. I've had one frozen daiquiri and one bourbon. Like,
it's, It's not an Aerosmith video, is it? Because you got Liv Tyler on the brain.
No. Oh, man. I'm going to go watch Armageddon after this. All right. Screen. Share. All right, fellas. Prepare to have your mind blown. So, Scotty Too Hotty was asking us, are we going to talk about the Trump shooting? Well, here we are.
We're waiting.
Can y'all see it?
Of course.
Okay. Yep. So, I'm going to play this clip. It's muted, so that and it's off YouTube. It's our platform, so we shouldn't have any copyright issues here. Pay attention to this man right here.
Yep.
It looks like a homeless person.
Yep. JFK Jr.
Hey! Don't steal my... Hold on. Look, so Trump gets shot at. Everybody sits down. Except for the homeless man. He's just standing there. He actually looks left and right before the gunshots even go off.
He's like, are they shooting at me or him?
Well, it's almost as if he was like waiting to, for it to pop off. Like he's looking around. He's like, hey, they haven't shot yet. And then it happens. But he doesn't sit down. He everyone else takes cover to some extent. And this homeless man is just standing here. He kind of looks lost, kind of looks clueless. But when you get to the end of the thing, he eventually sits down and like pulls out his cell phone and starts texting somebody. I'm like, so you just witnessed the presidential nominee get shot at in this mass pandemonium, and you're just casually sending that tweet or whatever. I don't know what he's doing. It's odd. That's all I'm saying. So, as was already mentioned, because great minds think alike, this man's name is Vincent Fusca. He is allegedly JFK Jr. They say JFK Jr. faked his death, and this is that guy. So if you start going down the rabbit hole, pulling these threads, get out of here.
Ooh, who's that?
What's really interesting is 4th of July, the Rolling Stone magazine published a story about this guy being JFK Jr. It's really weird because JFK Jr. was really close friends with Trump. They were like super tight back in the 90s. Obviously, JFK Jr. died in 1999, allegedly. And then this whole thing with QAnon came out, which is, you know, this right-wing conservative conspiracy theorist thread or forum. And this guy Q is always posting. They think Q is Vincent Fusca, aka JFK Jr. That's just one of the things. So if we pull up some facial recognition, I don't know. Like, it's pretty freaking convincing. Like, these are basically the same guys. What's even more weird about this whole guy, his name, Vincent Fusca, in Latin, means to conquer the darkness. So that is basically what Trump is trying to do. Throw out the, you know, drag the swamp, throw out the deep state and everything. So if this dude is like trying to team up with Trump, kind of makes sense. His name would mean to conquer the darkness. He's also only been on the scene since like 2018, 2019. He came out of nowhere. He just appeared in the political scene. There's pictures of him alone, Lauren Boebert, all kinds of other Congress people, representatives, like whoever he is, he has some pull, he has some clout, because when he shows up, people start taking pictures with him. So there's that. He's backstage with Trump. Here's another face-to-face picture. He kind of looks like JFK Jr. Am I right? Like this very close resemblance. Take away the glasses, the scruff. He has a very likely backstory. Like he's
the
a
nose. It's the nose.
The nose and the chin is like perfect. And so if you were going to fake your death and come back a couple of decades later, would you not claim to be from another country? He's claiming to be this Italian American immigrant. Like, who's going to go search down his high school and his grade school and his old neighborhood in Italy? Nobody's doing that. Whereas if he just popped up on the scene and was like, oh, hey, I'm from, Barstow, California, people are going to go search his old yearbooks and they're going to follow the trail to find out who he is. Shows up, glasses, scraggly beard, probably a wig, always wearing a hat, looks like a homeless person, the complete opposite of what JFK Jr. was. He was a Playboy, GQ Man of the Year, all that. So he's either JFK Jr. That's one of the things. He might be John Denver. I've seen that one.
John Lennon.
Or he's a time traveler. I don't know. Ooh, he might be a time traveler. And that would kind of explain the wacky behavior of him standing on stage behind Trump just seconds before the shooting. He's like looking back and forth. And when it happens, he's like, oh, let me update whatever this device is. This is a little time traveling device that he pulled out. I don't know.
But who's there's like, who's jumping on that? Ed?
I got a question. Well, maybe, if you remember correctly, maybe, that he knew his plane was going to go down off of Martha's Vineyard. And he kind of just made sure that he wasn't in that plane.
I mean, at the time, if you were a Kennedy, you were known to wake up dead. Or, you know, they were the Kennedy name was being shot down and gunned down. And, you know, and maybe he faked his death for his own safety.
Professor, what you look at? Already smiling.
FBI's already listening to me, so I don't
put your phone on airplane mode. You're all good.
Scotty I had a good one queued up, so he better listen to this one and comment on YouTube about it. This one was just for him.
I think that there's so much with the conspiracies right across the board. I think everyone, whatever we're talking about, has a sprinkle of truth to it, and how deep it goes from there. Every people don't just come up with stories that consecutively, you know, grow legs over the years. There's got to be an inkling of truth to it, because everything would be a story then. Somewhere, somebody saw something for whatever subject we're talking about, and it's just a matter of, for years, it's just the washing it over. Like, take the Roswell crash, let's just say. Why is it that right after the Roswell crash, all of a sudden, Hollywood just made fun of sci-fi movies? They just made a big, it's almost like saying, everybody that sees that is little green men, or, you know, there's a big boom, the horror movies kind of stopped and it became sci-fi, you know, everything from oversized insects to, the original The Thing. It was all just part of the Hollywood cover up for what's truth, blended with stuff that's just a whitewash over it. So I think that the Roswell crash probably happened. Look at all the things that came after that. TV, fiber optics, the microwave, all that stuff was supposedly reverse engineered from that original spacecraft that they got. And supposedly before that there was crashes, but not on record. You know, that was the first one that they actually, you know, it got printed in the newspaper that it actually happened, and then they retracted it and said it was that stupid weather balloon. So we could talk about this all day, Bradford, all freaking day. But
let's do it one day.
Yeah, it's the whitewash, right? That everything, it's just ingrained with a whitewash, and it's a matter of, you know, getting past that. And I don't think we'll ever know the truth about this stuff. That's the whole ruse with the whole thing. You'll never ever know, because if you know, you can't handle the truth, a lot of people would lose their marbles if they knew what was what. If certain things that were instilled for years in society are all fabricated, just imagine that.
This guy Vincent Fusca, like, you can't, like, you know, I always say, like, let's look at coincidences. This guy ran a Trump campaign out of Pennsylvania. He had like a Trump van. He'd drive around, give out Trump stickers and buttons, and he wrecked it, and he started a GoFundMe to like pay for it or some shit. But he's also been photographed like in Trump's limo. Like, it's like, there's a homeless person. He has no identity. So if he's not JFK Jr., who is he? How is he getting into Trump's limo? Why do other Congress people, Republican representatives of ours, that, you know, elected officials, all want to take pictures with this guy.
Never know.
It's fucking weird, man.
Did you see that video that somebody posted from Japan that somebody found a like a iPhone 13 or something like that in 1980 on a news broadcast? Did you see that?
Mm-mm.
There was some news footage that, look at Ed with a MAGA hat on. He's agreeing with me.
No, it's not.
No, that's a Washington Capitals.
Anyways, what I was saying was there was this video that surfaced recently where there was a Japanese news footage from 1980 where this guy that's a news reporter, of course it's in Japanese, he's going through like an apartment, and he grabs something out of a drawer and he shows it up to the screen, and it's an iPhone 13. People have looked at it. It's an actual iPhone 13, and the film was from 1980. It's popped up recently on the internet. So, you know, riddle me this, Cape Crusaders.
About to go Google that.
Yeah, you'll see it. These things are weird because they'll pop up and they'll go viral for like a week, and then all of a sudden you can't find it. And then like years later, it'll come up again with somebody, you know, had it saved or something on a file. So it's weird how that stuff works.
Vincent Fusca took a picture with Lauren Boebert. I could not find, I wanted to show that photo. I could not find it. Like it's off of Google. It's not on there.
Instead, you showed Montel Williams' girlfriend after that video was done. That's a whole nother thing.
You mentioned a MAGA or a MAGA hat. Just the last little tidbit. A MAGA is the highest level of priest in the Satanic Church.
Can you believe it?
Just a gee whiz.
Just
saying.
Fifth
degree satanic priest. They're called a MAGA. I don't know.
Yeah. Just
throw that out there.
Yeah. Like who, MAGA from WWE?
Hey.
Yeah. What can you do?
What are you going to do?
So we're going to wrap up the tinfoil hat this week because we could get real long-winded with this. And we're going to move on to another segment that we've been doing. And Chris isn't with us this week, but he sent in his Cooking with Chris. So, Thomas.
Alrighty.
Do your thing, chicken wing.
Alrighty. Cooking with Chris is brought to you by the book, Loving Elliot, a fitting tribute to the undying love. It was written by our own Andy Clark. Elliot was the oldest special needs Jack Russell Terrier when he passed at age 21. The book's available at Amazon.com.
Go buy a freaking book. Come on, read a good story. Give it to your kids. Give them some culture. Be a good parent. Buy a book. So we'll drop Chris's video in probably right here under Ed's head. So we're going to, I guess we'll wrap up this episode. We're about an hour into it. Plus we got the interview this week. So got some shout outs. We're going to start with Ed's head. Ed, shout out this week.
All right, to all of our listeners. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Keely, for coming on. You did such a wonderful job. Thank you very much for coming on. Check her out. She's wonderful, wonderful young lady, and we're very happy to have her as friends of the show now.
Friends of the show.
Friends of the show.
Friends of the show. Brad Pitt, what do you got this week? Besides sunstroke.
I want to shout out Chris. Sorry, can't be here, buddy. I know you're busy tucking your wiener between your legs and wearing your Brock Purdy jersey. I wish you all the best. I'll see you next week.
Wow. Opening ceremony joke there, too. Thomas, what do you got?
Is it a coincidence that Chris and the Phantom are both not here in the same week?
Hey.
I was just offended that the Phantom was on social media bashing the Philadelphia team store. And I'm like, wait a minute. If you want to burn the Eagle stuff or the Philly stuff, that's fine. But Mishkov's coming to Philly. You want to keep those jerseys. You want to keep all that stuff pristine. You just want to, you know, be careful who you want to offend there, Brankowitz. So, so I'm going to wrap it up this week. Yeah. It went by fast. There was like an hour, and we just, you know, did our thing and talk shop and yucked it up and made fun of Brad for once. And his new wife, Liv Tyler. And, you know, I just want to say thanks to everybody for another week. And I think a big episode next week. What do you think, Ed? Big episode?
Big time stuff.
I think so. So watch for us after SummerSlam. It should be good. And it'll be, I believe, a full recap of SummerSlam. It should be pretty epic. So we'll see you guys next week.
Happy birthday, Christine.